Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping our listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with A Cycle of Revenge. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. The people of Israel were being oppressed by the Philistines, and they had been enslaved to them for 40 years, a long time. But at last, Yahweh raised a new deliverer for them, named Samson, from the unlikely tribe of Dan. And yet, as he grew up, it became obvious that this self-centered young man was attracted to bad girls of the Philistine oppressors, rather than of his own people, and he chose to marry one. Yet at the wedding, he attempted to enrich himself through a riddle to his Philistine groomsmen, and that went sour when his wife wheedled the secret out of him and then gave it to his groomsmen after they had threatened her. So he left her, went home in a huff, and his father-in-law decided he didn't want her anymore and gave her to his best man. Well, this was a messy situation that Samson had created for himself, and yet we see through it all that Jehovah had planned all this in order to start a quarrel between the Philistines and Samson, in order to bring about Samson's attacking them and bringing about Israel's deliverance. So we take up the story in chapter 15 and verse 1, where we read, "After a while, in the time of wheat harvest, it happened that Samson visited his wife with a young goat. And he said, 'Let me go into my wife, into her room.' But her father would not permit him to go in. So after a while, Samson's anger cooled, and he saw it in his heart to forgive his wife. Now, we don't know how long after, because it says wheat harvest. We could figure out when that was, but the problem is we don't know when his wedding was in the first place, so we can't tell how long after it was. So the Bible isn't telling us at the time of wheat harvest to tell us how long later. But what should come to our minds if we knew their society, their agrarian society, and the way it worked, is that we should realize that wheat harvest was a festive time. As an agrarian society, a farming society, much of their wealth was tied up in their crops. And so when it came time to harvest, your harvest was your wealth. And a good harvest was a time of great rejoicing. People at the time would generally not live on their scattered farms. That was too dangerous. But they would have their lands outside the city, and they would retreat inside the city behind the walls at night for protection, and then leave the city and go out to the fields to the harvest during the day. Of course, typically, not everyone in the city would go out. But at harvest, it was different. At harvest, just about everyone would leave the city and go out into the fields. And it was a time of rejoicing, a time of celebration. They would all chip in on the work. It was a time of hard work, too. But you were bringing in your wealth. So it was a festive time. So it was a time of feeling good, a time of forgiving, kind of like our own Christmas season. And so when wheat harvest comes, Samson's anger cools. He's feeling good. He's feeling celebratory at this holiday time of year. And so he decides he can forgive his wife for betraying his riddle to his groomsmen. So he decides to go back to her and decides, well, she might need a reason to take me back. So he brings a present, a kid of the goats. Understand, in Hebrew, the word for lamb and kid is the same word. So they add of the goats to tell you which one is meant. Of course, we have a separate word, lamb and kid, we can use, but in Hebrew they didn't. So he comes with this kid of the goats, and then he asks, he wants to go into her room. But her father won't permit it. Verse 2, her father said, "I really thought that you thoroughly hated her. Therefore I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister better than she? Please take her instead." So her father informs him that he had given her away to another, to basically the one who was his best man among the groomsmen. Now, this seems to have been according to their customs at the time. As we read the story in the book of Samuel later, of the marriage of Saul's daughters, Merab and Michal, we'll see that there is a time for them to get married. It seems that there was a window when they wanted to marry their daughters. It wasn't like you had to, of course, but culturally, this was the time. They were ready to get married, and he wanted to marry them to some man. And so it was necessary to marry them to someone. And when Samson had left in a huff, her father had thought, well, I have to marry her to someone, and Samson doesn't want her anymore, so I'll give her to his best man. It could also be this was a way, of course, they'd gone through the wedding celebration and everything. It could be a way of saving face for him, because they go through all this, and then the groom disappears. It's kind of humiliating. So he had given her to someone else, but he tries to talk Samson into her younger sister. Isn't she better? The King James said more beautiful. The New King James says better. Well, I don't know exactly how better, but of course her father is trying to talk him into something. He says, yes, the younger one's better. Well, maybe she was, maybe she wasn't, but he's trying to sell her to Samson. But Samson will have none of it. Verse 3, and Samson said to them, this time I shall be blameless regarding the Philistines if I harm them. So Samson tells them, I'll be justified this time if I get revenge. Well, what does that mean? The last time, when they had cheated to get the answer to his riddle, his part was supposed to be to give them 30 changes of garments if they answered his riddle. Well, he went out and killed 30 Philistines from another town, took their garments, and gave it to them. But he says, this time I'll be justified in getting revenge. Well, is he saying he wasn't justified the last time? Is his conscience smiting him a little bit? You know, losing this bet wasn't quite justification for killing 30 men. But he says, this time I'll be justified. Well, was he really? Well, the one who decides to enter into the cycle of revenge, for him the revenge is always justified. What they did to me justifies this revenge. But the thing about revenge is the revenge you take is almost always greater than the offense. Notice that people don't try to take revenge by doing the same thing that happened to them. They generally want to do something worse, something more painful, something more damaging. And that's exactly what Samson is going to do. Verse 4, then Samson went and caught 300 foxes, and he took torches, turned the foxes tail to tail, and put a torch between each pair of tails. So he goes out and he catches 300 foxes. Now that must have been quite a job. In fact, it seems doubtful. Bullinger in the Companion Bible suggests that these were jackals. And the thing is, with Hebrew animal names, is that once Hebrew stopped being spoken, something like animal names becomes very hard to identify. Because since those animals aren't being called that anymore, you come later and a couple similar animals could apply to the same Hebrew word and you don't know which. But the thing about jackals is they're pack animals. They hang out in packs, so you could catch them by the pack. Whereas foxes are loners. And if you're going to catch foxes, you almost have to catch them one at a time or in pairs. And that would be very, very hard to do. So it seems much more likely that these were jackals, and he caught packs of jackals until he had 300. Still, even that would be hard. Well, then he takes these jackals, these 300 of them, and he takes torches, and he turns the jackals tail to tail, and he ties a torch between each pair of tails. So he has 150 pairs of jackals with a torch tied to their tails. What does he do then? Verse 5. When he had set the torches on fire, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up both the shocks and the standing grain, as well as the vineyards and olive groves. So he sets the torches on fire, and he lets the jackals go into the Philistine crops. Now just imagine the chaos. These jackals are terrified, as all animals tend to be terrified of fire, and they try to run from it, and yet it's following them. It's tied to their tails. And yet then, they can't just run as they see fit. They're tied to another jackal. And this jackal wants to run too, but he doesn't necessarily want to run the same direction as the other jackal. So he's trying to run this way, and the other jackal's trying to run that way, and they aren't going together, and they bump into each other, and they fight, and they thrash around, and the fire spreads, and they're terrified, and they try to run again, and they're tied to each other, and we imagine them rolling and going here and there and everywhere, and just everything is being lit on fire. One pair of these would cause a lot of destruction. Imagine 150. Now, this is a clever plan. Because imagine if Samson had taken one torch and tried to light the fields of the Philistines on fire. Well, they could have tracked him down pretty fast. Found out where the problem was coming from. But imagine the chaos and the quickly spreading chaos of these 150 pairs of jackals with fire tied to their tails. The fire would be everywhere and no one could stop it. It would just cause total ruin to their crops. And remember what I told you earlier, crops were their wealth. This was a huge financial disaster. And it was more than wealth, of course. That was what they ate. It was their food. A large portion of their food source was destroyed. And the Philistines would have no way to stop it. Basically, the jackals would have to kill each other or fall down dead or get engulfed in flames before they'd stop. Unless he got lucky and hit both of them with a spear or something. And yet, that would just be one pair of 150. So their crops are totally destroyed. Not only the wheat, because remember it was a time of wheat harvest. So not only the standing grain, but also their vineyards with all their grapes in it. And then their olive groves where they'd get the oil. These are just all destroyed. Verse 6, then the Philistines said, "Who has done this?" And they answered, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion." So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. So the Philistines, once the disaster is all over, they ask, "Who did this?" Obviously, they know that someone did this on purpose. Jackals don't just get torches tied to their tails, tied together and tied to their tails like this without somebody doing it. And they figure it out. It was Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, and they even know why he did it, because the Timnite took his wife and gave her to his companions. So they decide to get revenge of their own. And they head for the nearest target, which is the woman and her father. And what they do is they burn them with fire. Now this was the same violent reprisal Samson's groomsmen, his companions at his wedding, had threatened her with if she had not found out Samson's riddle for them. Whether they actually would have done it or not, we might have questioned there, but now we see that this is the kind of people Philistines were, and they really did it. But this doesn't please Samson either. Verse 7, Samson said to them, "Since you would do a thing like this, I will surely take revenge on you, and after that I will cease." So Samson said, "What you did was worse than what I did. So now I have to get revenge on you again." He says, "Then I'll stop." Well, problem with revenge is it seldom just stops. I mean, one party basically has to be destroyed before the revenge stops. Otherwise, once you get in the cycle of revenge and counter-revenge, it just keeps going and keeps getting worse and worse. So Samson says, "This will be my last revenge." Well, right. The Philistines aren't going to let it be that way. Verse 8, so he attacked them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. Then he went down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Etam. So he just starts to slaughter the Philistines, right and left. And uses his figure, hip and thigh, he slaughters them. And notice he's doing this single-handedly. And again, remember what we read when he took the lion and tore it apart with his bare hands. The spirit was still empowering him. Now, why would the spirit empower Samson? When you look at this whole mess and you realize it's all Samson's doing. He started it when he stubbornly wanted to marry a Philistine forbidden by the Lord in the first place. So why is the Spirit with him through all this mess? Well, remember what we read back in chapter 14 and verse 4, that the Lord was doing this to stir up trouble between Samson and the Philistines, to stir up Samson against the Philistines. The Lord wanted Samson to deliver Israel. And remember what we learned from chapter 13, the Lord had chosen him to do that before he was born. Now, the problem with choosing somebody before they're born is that you don't know what that person is going to turn out to be like. Because people have free will. They aren't just robots. They aren't just automatons. They're automatically going to be the way you program them to be. And when the Lord chose Samson before his birth, he had to deal with Samson then, however he turned out. Now, the Lord is plenty intelligent enough and plenty powerful enough to deal with Samson no matter what kind of man he is. But we see that perhaps through his parents saying, "Oh, this our boy is the great deliverer," and spoiling him terribly, he turns out to be a self-centered, narcissistic young man. He's not the type of man of God to whom the Lord can say, "Because you're my faithful servant, I command you to go out and attack the Philistines." And he says, "Yes, Lord, I'll do it at your command," and goes out and attacks them. No. Samson is self-focused. The Lord knows he needs to be angry at the Philistines. He needs a beef against them before he's going to be willing to attack them. And so what does the Lord do? He uses the material he has. He uses Samson the way he is. He knows Samson. He knows what will move him. And so he moves him that way. And you say, this is a mess. We see that, yes, that's the way it is when the Lord uses fallen human instruments to do his will, is that sometimes things get messy. But the Lord can work through the mess to get his will done anyway. And he wanted Israel freed from the Philistines. And he wanted Samson to start to do it. Well, Samson is only going to do that if he has skin in the game, if he's angry at the Philistines himself. And so the Lord stirs him up and then empowers him to destroy the Philistines. Granted, not for great godly motives, but ultimately the Lord's will is getting done through Samson. It reminds me of that high priest in the New Testament. When the priests are all getting together, the religious leaders are getting together to decide what to do about Christ. And that priest speaks and he says that this one man, Jesus Christ, needs to die for the whole nation. Now he just means they need to murder him. He was speaking out of his own selfish and ungodly motives. And yet we read that God was moving him to give this prophecy, that Christ would indeed die for the nation of Israel, and not just for them, but for all who would believe on God through him. So the Lord used even a wicked man like the high priest to give his prophecy. Well, he's using Samson, this selfish, self-centered, narcissistic man, revengeful man, to get his will done on destroying the Philistines and their power over his people. Well, after Samson slaughters these Philistines, we read, then he went down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Now, this is interesting because Etam means lair of wild creatures. So he basically goes to a place where no one else is. Moreover, Etam is in the territory of Judah, which is south of his own home territory of Dan. So it seems that Samson doesn't go home. Well, I think he realizes, even though he says this is the last stroke of revenge, I think he realizes that it's not going to end there, that the Philistines won't rest with his great destruction of crops and this great slaughter of men that he's done. And so I think Samson cares enough about his family that he doesn't want to lead the Philistine army back home to his front door. I mean, look what they did to his wife and her father. So he goes into Judah to a place all by himself to wait and see what they're going to do. Well, at least he cared about his family. We do see Samson has some good qualities. Well, sure enough, the Philistines respond. Verse 9. Now the Philistines went up and camped in Judah and deployed themselves against Lehi. So the Philistines bring their army. And it seems they have plenty of informers, plenty of spies. And they find out where Samson has gone. He's not in Dan. Notice they don't go into Dan. But they head into Judah. See, they aren't going to strike the wrong place for revenge this time. Last time they tried to strike at Samson's family and look what happened. This time they're going for Samson himself. So forget Dan. They head into Judah where Samson is. Now they encamp against Lehi. Now Lehi means jaw. But interestingly, we'll see that it hadn't actually been named that until after this incident. We'll talk about that when we get there. Verse 10, and the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? So they answered, we have come up to arrest Samson, to do to him as he has done to us. So the men of Judah are upset. Remember, Israel has been enslaved by the Philistines for 40 years. And an enslaved people starts to lose their courage. At first, maybe they are valiant in freedom fighting and trying to cast off this yoke of oppression. But after a while, the freedom fighters, if they don't succeed, they all get killed. And the rest are just beaten down. They're cowed. They give up and accept being slaves. And after 40 years, they have pretty much accepted their fate. They've accepted being slaves, and they've given up in trying to fight for freedom. So when the Philistines come into their territory, the men of Judah are upset. Why have you come? Why are you attacking us? We didn't do anything. Don't hurt us. It's kind of their attitude. Well, the Philistines, they want to get revenge on Samson. They say, we've come up to bind him. We've come up to arrest him, to do to him as he has done to us. So the Philistines are wanting to get revenge on Samson. Notice the cycle of revenge continues. So what Samson said, this will be the last stroke. Well, even he probably knew that that wasn't the case. That's not how revenge works. Verse 11, then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines rule over us? What is this you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them. So 3,000 Judahites go to Samson. Well, this was quite a crowd. Remember, they're going at the Philistines' instigation to arrest him. And yet they come with 3,000. Well, remember, this guy had just done a great slaughter all by himself. And so they are taking no chances, it seems. This reminds me of the Lord's arrest, when a huge crowd of 600 men came to arrest him in the garden. Well, there at least he had his disciples with him. Here is just Samson all by himself. So this shows how they fear him. And this cowed people isn't very valiant. Now they point out to him that he has angered those who rule over them and have ruled over them for 40 years, and they don't think they have any power to cast off their overlords. So why would he anger them? Well, he feels completely justified by his revenge. He just did to them what they did to him. Well, that was far from accurate. Again and again, his revenge was greater than the offense. But he feels justified every step of his path down the cycle of revenge. Verse 12, but they said to him, we have come down to arrest you, that we may deliver you into the hand of the Philistines. Then Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not kill me yourselves. So they are going to try to pacify the Philistines by arresting him and giving him up. That's their intention. They have no intention of rallying behind him to try to defeat the Philistines. Well, Samson isn't worried. And he tells them that he is ready to surrender if only they will swear to him that they won't kill him themselves. Notice Samson's supreme confidence in the face of this situation. His own people aren't ready to back him up, but he has supreme confidence in the power of the Holy Spirit to get him out of this. He thinks, I'm God's deliverer, and so God isn't going to let me get killed by these Philistines. He'll deliver me, even if he just gives me the power to do it myself. Well, there was confidence in God. And in spite of all his negative qualities, he has this supreme confidence in the power of the God who chose him. Verse 13, so they spoke to him, saying, no, but we will tie you securely and deliver you into their hand, but we will surely not kill you. And they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. So the Judahites are very willing to swear this, that they won't kill him, but they say they're going to bind him fast. They say, we're not going to tie you loosely so you can try to escape. We're going to tie you securely and deliver you to them. He says, fine. So they bind him with new ropes, the best they had, not likely to be old and brittle and break. But new ropes are nothing against the Spirit of the Lord. Verse 14, when he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands. So all the precautions the Judahites had taken to try to pacify the Philistines, of tying him with these new ropes, this means nothing. The Philistines see Samson, their enemy, being led out to them by his own people, and they start to shout with excitement. And yet their excitement is short-lived. Because new cords are no problem for the Spirit of Yahweh. And they become like burnt flax. And my understanding of that is a lot like a candle wick. Well, a candle wick is pretty wimpy to begin with. But then when you burn it, it's nothing. And he just breaks these solid, thick, new ropes like they were nothing with the Spirit of the Lord. Well, it was the Philistines who were in trouble before God's Spirit, not Samson. And we'll see how the Lord delivered him in our next study. So Samson's unwise actions in choosing a marriage partner, and then in trying to get money out of these wicked, cheating Philistines, resulted in total disaster for his marriage. And yet he blamed the woman's father rather than himself. Samson's attempt at revenge results in counter-revenge by the Philistines, which results in counter-revenge by Samson, which results in counter-revenge by the Philistines, which results in counter-revenge by Samson. And this cycle of revenge is one that's all too easy for people to get into. Yet in spite of this mess, this was all the Lord's will to deliver Israel from the Philistine oppression. And so the Lord was working even through this self-centered, but strong in faith man, Samson. And we'll see how it all turned out in our next study.
With all of Samson's faults, he does prove to be a man of faith. He believes God. He believes that God will use him to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Even through this stubborn, selfish, disobedient human instrument, God's will be done. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on a cycle of revenge. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Book of Judges with Samson the Judge. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word more, you know God more, and you love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also offer a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible Studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry at P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say so long, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.